honorable members, it has been a long journey from way back when. 9 years through some dark nights, 9 years through days and nights, at times I thought we'd never see the sunrise or the sunset. But I've arrived today, and looking back, it has been an experience worth living. An experience that I will be able to recall the trials and the tribulations in returning to this honorable house to represent the people of Cass Street North. But having arrived, Madam Speaker, one would have thought that the new kids on the block would have developed a new approach, that their style would have changed, and that they would have given new hope. However, that wasn't to be so. And so in the last 2 days, we have heard the diatribe from those opposite, some who seem to suffer with amnesia as a result of the shock of December 11th, and don't seem to understand that December 11th did take place. This afternoon, my friend, the member for Cass Street South, in his presentation, spoke of education and the level of seriousness which his former government seemed to be, in his opinion, to education. He spoke of the importance of universal secondary education, and how prepared was his administration in delivering universal secondary education to the people of St. Lucia. But in their preparation, what he failed to say was that during their time, the administration simply neglected the CAMDU, the Curriculum Development Unit, at the Mons, allowed the facility to deteriorate, not showing any interest in the importance of that unit to the development of education in St. Lucia. And you ask yourself, what sort of preparedness was the administration, what frame of preparedness was the administration in? Then he spoke of the question of lands in the Marigo Valley, which he claimed that the SLP had reserved for people from Marigo for housing. Well, let me just indicate to the minister, in fact, the representative, in fact, he did say that the first site for the psychiatric hospital was in Marigo, which is the site identified by the St. Lucia Labour Party. Let me inform you that mental health reform started during my time, and the first site identified for the proposed psychiatric hospital was identified by myself at Marigo, through which we started the investigation for the establishment of the psychiatric hospital. However, let me assure you, or correct you, that that property in Marigo, which the Honorable Minister indicated housing will be constructed, was acquired by the government of the United Workers' Party many years before the entry of the St. Lucia Labour Party in 1997. That property, after 9 years, Labour failed to do anything on it. Failed to do anything after 9 years. the minister who today has come forward and with his aggression in delivering, you spoke as if it was something unusual for a minister within a few months to have been able to deliver a project of such magnitude. Yesterday I heard on the other side statements being made about the political leader and his presentation and his vision, his tunnel vision, and words to this effect. But I want to inform honorable members that the honorable Prime Minister and Minister for Finance, year after year throughout his career, has demonstrated that he has a vision that lives on throughout. Today, if you would just spend a few moments and just wander to the north and to see what has happened at Grocery in Rodney Bay, the vision of the Minister for Finance as far back as 1970-74 today is unfolding daily in the north. The Rotterdam is yet another vision that is unfolding. That is why today the representative for Castries East can be very confident that in a few months the people at Bocage and other areas, including my constituency in Carrily and Oglem City, will be receiving a reliable water supply because of the vision of our great leader, Sir John George Melvin Compton. And if you were to look in every direction, even the very office complex on the waterfront, you'd find that you don't only think of the vision of John Compton, but you live it, you walk it, and the very elevator that we move into is the work and the vision of Sir John George Melville Compton. But honorable members, we have come here today to discuss and to debate the appropriation bill and the budgetary statement made by the Minister of Finance in support of the appropriation bill. For my part, let me say that I've got the responsibility for the Ministry for Health. And there is a saying that health equals wealth. Health equals wealth in as much as a healthy nation is a wealthy nation. And therefore, when Minister for Youth and Sports indicated some of the things that we must do, I said, well, I need to begin to lead the way together with the leader of the opposition to attempt to do the things that must be done in getting our country to be a healthy and wealthy nation. Madam Speaker, the Ministry of Health is set to deliver a healthy nation believes that one of the first charges from that ministry is the provision of what we call health security. Health security, Madam Speaker, is defined as the guaranteeing of minimum protection from diseases and unhealthy lifestyles, along with food, environmental, economic, community, and political security. In other words, the Ministry of Health is charged with that responsibility of responding to the needs of our people, ensuring that we provide at all times the programs and the activities and the framework for our people to develop healthy lifestyles. In fact, this year, The WHO has adopted the theme, the main theme of health security as the theme for WHO World Health in for this year. Health security, therefore, Madam Speaker, calls for a public health response to emerging and re-emerging diseases. Too often we tend to forget that HIV/AIDS, which came about sometime in the 1980s, for which the Ministry of Health received quite a bit of funding in its programming at prevention and management of the disease, has been engaging in a very comprehensive program. The emerging dengue hemorrhagic fever, which came about in 1981, is yet another threat to our society. Cholera, West Nile virus, and SARS, all of these are diseases, my friends, we must never forget. International health regulations also fall under health security, in that it calls for our countries to subscribe to what we consider to be the international health regulations that will protect our people. So, in the year 2005, our governments throughout the world came together and agreed that there was need to subscribe to international health regulations that would allow us to put in place the necessary protocols that will protect our people and protect them against control and provide them with public health responses to the international spread of diseases in ways more numerous to mention. Public health infrastructure is yet another area that we must at all times provide, in that the only way one can guarantee protection and the assurance of international health regulations is by ensuring that our infrastructure, our public health infrastructure, are put in place. Health security through sustainable development in healthy settings, in our environments, what do we do in our communities? All of these are areas that we need to put in place to ensure that we provide that security. To provide health security, the ministry has, in response, developed a reviewed national strategic plan for the health sector. And I must therefore take this opportunity to commend the former administration on the work which was commenced towards the formulation of the National Strategic Plan for Health. What the National Strategic Plan for Health does, or attempts to do, is really and truly to bring all of the ideas which were brought together over the years and to focus the emphasis of the programs of the Ministry of Health in a manner that will achieve good health among our people. You see, Madam Speaker, as far back as 1978, when governments of the world met in Alma Ata and adopted the Alma Ata Declaration for primary health care, we have seen now, 30 years later, that countries are still attempting to get on top of the situation and attempt to come to grips with the challenges that they face. You may recall, Madam Speaker, that at one stage we spoke of health for all by the year 2000. And later on we spoke of the Millennium Goals. On this occasion, we are saying that the time has come for us to develop our strategic plan for health. The emphasis, therefore, for the strategic plan for health is one which focuses heavily on the strengthening of our primary health care services. Many years ago, St. Lucia was considered to have one of the most successful primary health care programs. And I'm sure you recall, Madam Speaker, many occasions we boasted as a government during our time of having at least 36 health centers, one in every community within a radius of a mile. I must say, unfortunately, at this stage, it has reduced to 32, because under the last administration, at least 4 health centers were shut down, one of which being the Marshall Health Center. But it is a re-emphasis on primary health care programs, one that would allow us to improve the approach and to provide accessibility, public participation, health promotion, which is the main issue, appropriate technology, and intersectoral collaboration. Accessibility, Madam Speaker, is necessary in this regard, because if we are to promote primary health care in our nation, it is absolutely necessary to ensure that our people do have access to the facilities. It means, therefore, that we must ensure that in every community we provide those facilities to our people. But under the strategic plan, there is a new concept that is developing. And the concept is moving away from just a basic health center, providing a doctor and a nurse and a pharmacist and other health workers, to put together an even greater comprehensive team of health workers who will provide an even wider range of services at the community level. The primary health care program is intended to do a number of things. First and foremost, is to deal with the situation of prevention, creating a culture among our people, a culture to develop a lifestyle that will allow them to that will prevent them from getting sick and maintaining a state of wellness. The second aspect of the program is one of promotion, attempting to promote, to educate, to sensitize our people, so that there will be a new culture, as I indicated, formulating healthy public policies, reorienting the health services, and providing our people with an even greater range of services that will bring about the level of confidence that we are looking at the community level. Madam Speaker, the concept is that if we can strengthen the primary health care services in our community, prevention, if we can increase that, if we can develop the confidence among our people at the primary health care level, we are almost certain that our people then would withdraw from putting the pressure that they have been putting at our hospitals and creating the backlog that we normally have. Therefore, during the last financial year, the last administration approved funds for the renovation of a number of health centers throughout the island, and I'll come to that a little later. We believe that the time has come to review most of those health centers and to begin to adopt a new model, what we call an ideal model of health center, and to rename it health and wellness center, that will provide for education, promotion, curative measures, wellness programs, nutrition, mother and child programs, and other programs, dentistry, and all other programs at the primary health care level. so that now we move to wellness centers, health and wellness centers, rather than just simply health centers. Those facilities will be managed by a team of health workers, with one head leading the charge to provide the services at those centers. The centers will continue to provide curative programs, rehabilitation, and also supportive and palliative care. Through this approach, Madam Speaker, persons and communities are introduced to skills to increase their opportunity to remain healthy and to keep their communities healthy and achieve their productive potential. We believe that if we can develop this new approach to health, this new focus on primary health care, then we are likely to develop even more healthier society. Our strategic direction, therefore, calls for a nationwide implementation of the National Health Development Strategy throughout the country to bring that program in and to network it with polyclinics, health centers, hospitals. So while you have two hospitals, one in the north and one in the south, the intention is to establish four polyclinics. One at Groseley, which was the pilot project, one in Sucre, one in Denry, and one in Vierpont, and one in Castries, so that you have a network of health facilities providing a range of services from primary to tertiary throughout the island. This sort of arrangement, Madam Speaker, we hope will provide the kind of infrastructure to deliver the range of services that we're looking at. But to do this, Madam Speaker, the Ministry of Health must change its own approach. Its role must change. At this time, the Ministry of Health is engaged in managing health hospitals, engaged in managing health centers. So now we are saying that the Ministry of Health must then now change its approach and become a regulatory body and to privatize, or rather statutorize, hospitals and give them a level of autonomy that will allow them to provide the services to our people. There will be need, therefore, as we introduce those new programs, to find the necessary additional financing for the health sector. There will be need to provide additional human resources, increased training opportunities, and the introduction of retention strategies to respond adequately to the human resource demand and supply issues of the health sector. One of the things we have been faced in the health sector today, Madam Speaker, is the migration that is taking place in our country among our nurses. And later on, I will deal with some of the issues that are coming forward regarding the question of retention and nurse migration. Today, the Honorable Minister for Sport spoke of the study which was done by Professor Grevin. And I don't intend to go into the details because he gave the statistics. The statistics which indicated the level of diabetes and hypertension in our society here in St. Lucia. In fact, recently I received an invitation from the island of Nevis, inviting me to attend a conference to discuss the very issue of the prevalence of diabetes and hypertension in that country itself. The levels there are almost on par with us here in St. Lucia. At the Ministry of Health, there is still a need to analyze the information that we have received, to analyze the results of this study. And so we have sought the support of PAHO and CAREC to analyze the results, to determine exactly what the findings are, to analyze the method used. Because in some instances, what we are picking up, when you analyze, you may find you're picking up individuals who got diabetes as a result of heredity. You are picking up people and children who probably did not follow the protocol before screening the morning of screening, and a range of other issues which must come into play. But this, Madam Speaker, must be no reason, there must be no reason for comfort. And therefore, the Ministry of Health must respond to the results of the findings of this study. In response, the Ministry of Health will therefore put on fast track the implementation of the strategic plan. The first aspect of the strategic plan would speak to primary healthcare preventative programs. Very soon, you will be called upon to participate in a program called NutriFit, National Nutrition and Fitness Program, which is one designed to attract all of the sectors, the Ministry of Health, Ministry of Agriculture, Ministry of Youth and Sports, and other related ministries, so that on a daily basis, our nation will wake up to natural fit, where our people will be engaged in different aspects of nutrition, fitness, and wellness programs. Therefore, the Bureau of Health Education, whose mandate has been reviewed so as to give it even greater visibility and greater initiative to promote programs within the community. At this time, too often, the Bureau seems to be just responsive rather than proactive. We are looking at the possibility of developing programs where the Bureau, now redefined as the Bureau of Health, Education and Communication, so that that unit would have even greater communication with our people, promoting, educating, sensitizing our people, and sustaining the program of NutriFit. It is hoped, Madam Speaker, that NutriFit will encourage and will attract as many individuals as possible, the entire nation possibly, to get involved in that program of fitness and wellness. But the Minister for Sports indicated some of the end results. And one of the outcomes of failing to manage diabetes and hypertension is that of end-stage renal failure, which is becoming a very challenging issue for us here in St. Lucia. Sometime in 1991, the government of St. Lucia established the dialysis unit at Victoria Hospital, 4 beds. To date, that unit has grown. There are some 48 clients on renal dialysis. The total cost of treating these clients per year is $1.98 million. The problem is, once you begin to expose your people to such treatment and such services, you almost do not have a choice in terms of control. Because once they are detected, once they are diagnosed, and they are recommended, since you operate the public facility, you're almost bound to provide the services to the people. The government provides the service at a subsidized rate of $150 for treatment. The operating cost of the renal unit, dialysis unit, for the past 3 years is some $5,333,206. In 2004-2006, there were 28 patients, costing the government $1.6 million. In 2005-2006, there were 35 patients, $1.7 million, and in the last year, 2006-2007, it increased from 35 to 48, $1.999 million, almost $2 million. This Madam Speaker, is adding indeed quite a bit of pressure on the government. And at this stage, we are now looking to the south to see how we can engage, because of the demand on St. Jude Hospital, how we can engage in setting up a unit at St. Jude Hospital to provide renal dialysis in the south. Safian Hospital is a private institution. They too are providing the services. And we're now speaking to Safian because of the demand for renal dialysis. We're speaking to Safian on the possibilities of going into some sort of arrangement, joint ventures, to assist in providing the services to our people. What it means, Madam Speaker, is that we must move with haste to attempt to arrest the situation. Because if we follow what Professor Grevin said, it means that in a couple of years, the numbers who will be requesting renal dialysis will double in a very short space of time. Madam Speaker, let me just speak to a few issues regarding the main policy thrust. To move forward with the policy plan, we must strengthen the structure of the Ministry of Health to play a steering role in health sector development, policy direction, regulation, monitoring, evaluation, national quality system. That is absolutely important. For example, we do have a situation in St. Lucia today, where over the years we have been able to attract a number of medical schools in this country. There is the Spartan Health Sciences University at Deerport, which came in the early 80s and today have established themselves. You have the Inter-American University in Deerport also. But what is happening to control the entry of those schools and to create a standard and to accredit them, a committee was established by Cabinet some time ago to provide accreditation and monitoring facilities. We have reached the stage, Madam Speaker, where at this time there are at least four universities applying for establishment here in St. Lucia. We believe that our intention and our purpose must not be merely to attract universities at large, but to attract at least two or three good universities with a reputation that we can be proud of. Otherwise, we can attract anything onto our shores. It is therefore necessary at this stage to put in place legislation. And the committee, the last monitoring committee, has been reappointed to give guidance on the way forward in providing the necessary structure and framework for establishing legislation and programs to move on. We need, Madam Speaker, to enhance prevention and promotion activities as the main strategy to keep people well and productive. I spoke of natural fit. We also need to improve the management of diseases through appointments of dedicated focal points, primary health care managers and regional health supervisors in program areas and regions. I spoke to that issue in as far as the wellness centers, the health and wellness centers throughout the community. We need to improve treatment and management of health, mental illness and substance abuse through the implementation of the community mental health programs, commissioning the new mental hospital facility and upgrading of the drug rehabilitation center. This, Madam Speaker, is indeed a very important component of the program of the ministry. I spoke early on and indicated that mental health reform started during my time. Today, we are on the verge of commissioning a new psychiatric hospital, a 104-bed psychiatric hospital, which was constructed by the People's Republic of China. A member opposite indicated that when I was interviewed during a site visit, I indicated that the facility was indeed first class and one which we deserve in this country. Madam Speaker, The point is, we must be thankful to our friends who have presented us gifts. We must be thankful to the Chinese who have provided us with a new and modern health facility. My greatest concern, however, Madam Speaker, is that in accepting the new psychiatric hospital, the last administration failed to do a number of things. One of them, and I heard yesterday the leader of the opposition indicating that I can fly papers and fly reports now, one of them is the question of the administration and management of this new mental hospital. Being able to manage the institution, and as a result, today, we are called upon to put together a package that will allow us to have people trained, the human capacity, the capacity to train our people to manage the institution. But Madam Speaker, one of the problems which we have found ourselves in the establishment of the new mental hospital, is one in which the Republic of China indicated to the government that to accept the gift of the mental hospital, the government must do certain things. And one of the things that the government was supposed to do, one of the undertakings given by the government, was to do the necessary site preparation. We have found ourselves in a situation, Madam Speaker, where the government, in accepting the offer, failed to observe certain situations, certain conditions, certain protocols, and today it is costing the people of St. Lucia a tidy sum. The situation is that the site of the new psychiatric hospital and that of the proposed new general hospital is a site that is questionable in as far as the stability of the site. We have here at this time a situation where the government awarded a contract to a local contractor, Madam Speaker, to build a retaining wall which was estimated at $1.4 million to stabilize the ground upon which the psychiatric hospital is being built. This was necessary because of the question, because of the concerns which came out as a result of the geotechnical studies which were done. However, having granted the contract for $1.4 million, the contractor today has done work and claimed a total sum of $2.6 million and is claiming an additional $850,527. In other words, Madam Speaker, in accepting a gift, a much needed gift for mental health, we have a situation where a retaining wall built because of negligence, or rather, built because someone took a decision, or the government took the decision, that this is where we're going to put it, regardless of soil conditions, we have a retaining wall costing the people of St. Lucia some $3.3 million. But that is not all, Madam Speaker, because this one we consider to be the minor wall. The minor wall is not complete, but there's one called the Great Wall. And the Great Wall, Madam Speaker, is that wall which will stabilize the soil between the general hospital, whenever it gets started, and the mental institution, and that one is estimated at a cost of $4 million, the Great Wall. Madam Speaker, I must indicate that a a study was done, an evaluation of the site activities was done, and let me just quickly run through some of the comments, the summary of the major findings and recommendations. One, the bidding or tender process was not in keeping with standard procedures for tendering. Two, site conditions should have been thoroughly investigated, and an estimated cost of the works to be undertaken should have been determined. The cost should have been used partly as a basis for assessing all bids. Three, the bidding process should have involved at least two other companies with experience in similar work. In fact, Madam Speaker, what happened there was a situation where the
Honourable Member for Cassidy.
Madam Speaker, I would like to sign out. I don't know. I'm not sure whether that's there when the Minister said it. From what document is the Minister meeting, please?
Madam Speaker, I'll make the document available to you. But it's an evaluation of preliminary site works, new mental facility, Kubaru Castri, done by the firm of Adrian M. Dolce & Associates. They were commissioned by the government of St. Lucia, by the Ministry of Health. It's 2007, April 2007. It's the most recent document. So in this document, it is said that there are a number of things that went wrong, costing the government millions of dollars for a retaining wall because the government failed to do what they should have done in the first place, and that is to take every precautionary measure. The responsibility of the government of St. Lucia under their contract agreement was to complete the site preparation works comprising of excavation, retaining walls, and drainage prior to the commencement of construction by the main contractor. In order to meet its contractual obligation, the government of St. Lucia had to complete the site preparation work within a time frame of 5 weeks. A contract for preliminary works was awarded to ISHD Construction Company on the 5th November 2005 for the sum of $1.26 million. The net value claimed, including additional works and variations, being $3.3 million by the contractor. But you know, anyway, let me just leave the other parts alone, and I'll say to you that one of the observations made there was that the soil strata consists basically of four layers. And one of it is, I'm not a technician, I'm not any geotechnician, but it says there is a basaltic material softened on touch with water. So those of you who drive along the Millennium Highway will recognize on many occasions when you pass there, the boulders just rolling down the hillside whenever it rains, because of that particular material which is there on the site and which is not very stable. Later on, or even before that, there is another report which was done that was prior to this one, and again in that report done by Strata Engineering Consultants Limited, in which it says the presence of a 600 millimeter wide tension fracture and cavities in a rock outcrop at the location of BH04GH5. A more detailed survey is required of the tension fracture and cavities in the rock outcrop. So it shows, Madam Speaker, that in this whole situation, what seems to have transpired is one where the government undertook the project without due diligence, and one in which the people of St. Lucia are now being called upon to spend over $6 million in building retaining walls to put a facility of that magnitude. But Madam Speaker, we must move on, because we must also, as I said, improve the treatment and management of mental illness in our community. Building the new mental hospital is one thing. We must now begin to put in place programs that will manage our patients, programs that will allow us to keep them, and then to put them into the community and to manage them in the community at the primary level. Right at this time, there is a committee which has been put in place, and that committee is responsible for the transition program of moving from the old institution of the Golden Hope into the new institution and ensuring that the primary, the community mental health program is put in place to deliver the services that are required. Nutritional services, Madam Speaker, and the Bureau of Health Education I spoke on early on will allow us to develop the kind of programs that are required for our communities, for our people, to bring about more and better lifestyles among our people. Recently, Madam Speaker, with the introduction of World Cup cricket, we were able to introduce what is called pot health security. And it's all part of health security in that we're meeting international standards by providing to our people a level of protection at our ports, be it airports or seaports, where we have put in place a department that will do the necessary surveillance and screen people and also examine foods that are coming into our country to protect our people from the invasion of diseases, communicable diseases, etc. Water quality, Madam Speaker, is one area that the Ministry of Health must continue to monitor. And in collaboration with SAIL, the Caribbean Environmental Health Institute, we are now ensuring that we continue to monitor and to upscale the process of monitoring our water quality together with WASCO to ensure that our people at all times are provided with safe water. Vector control, Madam Speaker, is one area, again, at this time, which needs attention. It is recognized that over the last few years, we have seen a deterioration in the level of vector control, be it mosquitoes or other. And therefore, the Ministry of Health believes that in this term, we will look at those areas and improve on the programs that are being offered. The eye care program, Madam Speaker, is one program in which the government, the past administration, got engaged through the support of the Cuban government, where a number of St. Lucians were sent over to Cuba for the necessary treatment and diagnosis over in Cuba. However, the government of Cuba has offered to the government of St. Lucia what we call an ophthalmology center, which will provide right in St. Lucia the services which normally they would go to Cuba to receive. However, I have insisted to the government of Cuba that whereas it is their intention to send Cuban technicians here in St. Lucia to provide the services, I have insisted that there must be a transfer of technology so that our people can own the facility and to begin to provide the services to our people. Cuban Technical Support Program, Madam Speaker, over the last few years we have seen an increase in cooperation in technical support from the Cuban government. To date, we have at least 30 Cuban nurses who are providing services to St. Lucia. However, there are a number of problems with that program, among them being communication, protocol, licensing. And so it takes a little time, even before they start really providing the services, to get into the system. Therefore, we believe that time has come for us to look at those programs while we accept the Cuban program, but to begin to increase our output of training our own to take on the responsibility of providing the services to our people. Madam Speaker, what we have recognized, the cost of that program to St. Lucia is in the vicinity of $742,200 a year.
Honorable Minister, you have 10 more minutes with the list to complete your presentation.
Madam Speaker, I beg to suspend Standing Order Number 3210 to allow the member an extra 30 minutes to complete his presentation.
Honourable members, the question is that Standing Order 3210 be suspended to allow the Minister for Health an additional 30 minutes with a minute to complete his presentation. And now for the question. As many as all that opinion say aye, as many as there will be contrary opinions say no, I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it.
Madam Speaker, members, I thank you. So the Cuban Eye Program, provided under the Technical Support Program, at this stage, Madam Speaker, cost the government and people of St. Lucia a total of $742,200. And the reason for this, Madam Speaker, it is because upon the offerings by the Cuban government, our counterpart arrangement is that we provide them with housing, transportation, and an allowance. So it costs us some money. Madam Speaker, I move on to community health infrastructure. Community health infrastructure, as I spoke on early on, is one area under the strategic plan that needs strengthening to provide health security. Under that program, Madam Speaker, the Grosley Polyclinic, which was built in 1996, completed in 1996, intentionally to provide as a pilot project for consideration and replication in other parts of the country, today has reached a stage where it needs some additional attention. Attention in terms of expansion, consolidation of services, provision of additional services, so that we can fulfill all of the needs in the community. What we must understand is because the disease profiles are changing, as Minister Representative for Capturing East indicated early on, we are finding it even more necessary to expand the services provided, and therefore it means the profile and the concept of a health center or a polyclinic or a wellness center must change to provide those services to the community. The community nursing services, Madam Speaker, would provide the necessary support services in the community is one in which we need to give some greater support. Over the years, what we have seen is a trend of migration of our nurses, not necessarily from the community, but from the hospitals, but its impact on the community. Because as you take nurses from the hospitals, it means that you have less nurses who can move from the hospitals into the community. At this stage, the ministry has put in place a committee comprising representatives from the Sir Arthur Lewis Community College, the Ministry of Health itself, Victoria Hospital, St. Jude, to look at the development of retention programs that will allow for our nurses to stay in St. Lucia and to develop programs that would provide for greater training of nurses in St. Lucia. My philosophy is, if the world needs nurses, if England needs nurses and Canada needs nurses, let us train nurses. But the government must invest in a quota of nurses that we believe that we need. So if our annual quota of nurses, our need, is 50 nurses a year, the government must invest in the training of 50 nurses a year. But the excess nurses, can the excess individuals who got interest in nursing can join the program and make themselves available to the world. And that is the concept. I do not believe there's any other way. I do not believe that there's a way of training them at a lower level and hoping that you can keep them there. What you need to do is to provide quality, but invest in the training of nurses. And these are some of the areas we're looking at. But also there are other areas that you can get involved in as far as nurse retention programs. You don't necessarily need to give nurses a attractive salary like is offered in the United States. but by developing linkages with other institutions, be it in the Caribbean or in the United States or Canada, so that you can have them do those exchanges. This in itself provides a certain measure of incentive. But more than this, there's need for us to get engaged in the actual recruitment program, so that we don't just sit back and allow those people to come in and to recruit nurses, but we must say to them, we are prepared to work with you. You can recruit our nurses, but we want to ensure that there's a component whereby the nurses can return, having served overseas, but they can return and to receive recognition and probably some promotion based on what I call the continuing training as a result of experience. Madam Speaker, we move on to the question of community facilities. And in the last financial year, work was done on the Poisson Health Center, Larissus, Montrouge, Dexter, and Great Health Center. I have my concept of these renovations. They were done, undertaken by the previous administration, and I believe we needed to improve on the facilities. But I think the time has come, as I've said earlier, where we need to revisit what we call health centers and to be able to remodel, redesign, and come up with a new concept of health centers for our various communities. The super health center, the super hospital, Madam Speaker, is one. Both super and general hospitals are institutions that present great debate. There are people in general who say, please do not close the hospital because it's already closed because there are no beds there. There are others who say, please don't downgrade it to polyclinic. Under the strategic plan, we consider that those two institutions should be set up at a level of what I call polyclinic plus plus, meaning a polyclinic would provide a range of services, emergency services, lab services, etc., etc. In the case of Supre, to provide the services of a hyperbaric chamber because of the activities that take place in Supre, where there's a lot of diving taking place, so that we can provide that kind of service to individuals who suffer with the belly. But then also, you'd need to provide a certain level of what I call residential care to allow for stabilization in cases of emergency. Madam Speaker, in the case of the Supre Hospital, this financial year, the government will be spending some $849,000 on the Supre Hospital, part of an overall figure of $1.08 million to rehabilitate the Supre Hospital. So quite a bit will be happening in Supre. Apart from your mini stadium, the Supre Hospital will be looked at, and the Denry Hospital, discussions will continue on the way forward for Denry as to how do we proceed with Denry. Do we keep Denry where it is, or do we relocate Denry? Madam Speaker, I need to look at Victoria Hospital also. And with the new scheme of things of a new general hospital, the establishment of a new general hospital, we need to look at our health facilities, our health stock, to determine what do we do when we do certain things. What do we do in Shorefield Road as a health center? What do we do in Victoria Hospital and other places? Let me just give you quickly a sort of perspective of some of the ideas which are floating on. With the construction of the new general hospital, there are two ideas floating around for the Victoria Hospital. One is to establish what we call a maternal and child medical center, meaning a health facility or a hospital or a medical center that provides services for the children and the mother. You would recall, Madam Speaker, that the French government came forward many years ago in the 80s to establish the François Dalto maternity unit. That unit is pretty new and is of a class and standard that we must be proud of. I believe we should preserve that unit, and we should demolish the Duke of Edinburgh building, which is now the children's ward, and consider the other building, refurbish, rehabilitate, and present a nice facility where the mothers are in the front and the children are in the back, so they can just move just from one to the other in that unit. That is one concept. The other concept is to transform Victoria Hospital into a major polyclinic to serve the country's urban area. So these are ideas that are floating, and very soon, Madam Speaker, we will be able to address you on those issues. However, in the meantime, we believe that not because we are speaking of a new hospital, that we must neglect what we have. And therefore, in this financial year, we have agreed to allocate $1 million for equipment and rehabilitation work at Victoria Hospital to sustain it for the next 3 or 4 years, during which period we will construct the new hospital. Madam Speaker, we also have this situation where we must take into consideration the issue of Shofe Road. The Shofe Road Health Center has outlived its usefulness. The services once provided are no longer. No longer dental services, maternal child health, community nursing. The services are disappearing on a daily basis, with the exception of medical services. Recently, about a year or two ago, the Marshall Health Center was closed, and some of us on this side complained and criticized the former government. When you consider the situation at Marshall, there seem to be some reason, not seem, but there are reasons why it should be closed. However, there's a new concept, and we have placed in the budget an allocation for that one, a concept whereby we are considering the possibility of acquiring the old Marshall Market to redevelop into a major health center that will service Marshall, Sundell, Cedars, Waterworks, and that basin. So the Honorable Member for Castries East and myself can share something in common where our people will have a facility to themselves. We have allocated for this particular facility, the Marshall Health Center, a total amount of $3 million, but for this financial year, $100,000 to commence the process of rehabilitating that facility and to establish a major health center in the Marshall area. There is also an amount of $7.5 million, with an amount of $250,000 for this financial year, for the establishment of what we call the Castries Urban Polyclinic. This one we are thinking of for the Castries Central area, in the area of the graveyard. So look at the possibility of establishing a polyclinic there to provide for a number of services. And some of them are in response to what is happening in the city, in the urban areas. The gunshots and the cutlass wounds and all of these, to give them that specialty of service to provide to our people in the area. Madam Speaker, no guns in Marshall. I'm happy to hear this. Madam Speaker, we want to move on quickly, and I spoke about the need of what we are doing in mental health reform, the thrust of the policy on mental health, the restructuring of the inpatient services with a strong emphasis on shorter admissions and rehabilitation for return to community living. The challenge we have now, Madam Speaker, is that Golden Hope comprises not only mentally ill patients, but individuals who have been abandoned, geriatric patients, and other individuals who don't qualify to be in the setting of a mental hospital. So therefore, now we have this task, and the Honorable Prime Minister, Minister for Finance, has agreed that once we can find the families of those individuals, government will provide the necessary subvention to take care of those individuals in the community. But the whole mental health program, Madam Speaker, is one which provides not for institutionalization of our people, but to allow them to move back into the community and to make their contribution positively in society. So therefore, a program is being developed to do this. The full integration of mental health services into the primary health care system, offering a range of services from prevention, screening, and early intervention, is one that is proposed by the program. Madam Speaker, basically, this speaks to some of the issues in health in terms of the policy, a national policy that will provide for hospitals, polyclinics, health centers, health and wellness centers, with a heavy, heavy emphasis on wellness, a heavy emphasis on primary services, a heavy emphasis on prevention. But one aspect, Madam Speaker, which we have been speaking about for some time, as far back as 1996, is the issue of what we now consider to be, or we term as, universal health care. Universal health care, you call it what you want, is what we started in 1995-96 as national health insurance. It came about, Madam Speaker, at a time when the government felt that the costs for the provision of health care in this country were spiraling, and there was need to find alternative measures, alternative forms of financing. And so we sought the assistance of the CFTC to develop the NHI, to provide for funding, financing. However, the last administration felt that it needed to go a different way. Despite the fact legislation was put in place and a structure was put in place to implement, the last administration felt that they rather go by setting it up and calling it universal health care and attaching it to the national insurance company. Madam Speaker, we have reached at this stage at the point where we need to determine where we are going. We first need to determine how do we finance universal health care. Do we impose a tax? Do we make that imposition part of VAT? Do we make a deduction on salaries? How do we raise the necessary revenue to finance universal health care? Because what will happen, Madam Speaker, this insurance program will provide a basket of health services to our people, so that once you get to the hospital, to the health center, you present your NHI card or universal health card, and that card will allow you to access the services without having to put your hand in your pocket. But more than this, Madam Speaker, there is a program which comes with this, and that is the Health Information Systems Program. It is a program that provides for health profiles of every citizen. So your health profile will be in the system, and you go to the health center. If you fall ill and you're knocked out, unconscious, don't know where you are, once you can present that card, the presentation of the card to the health center, the polyclinic, or the hospital, will immediately upon swiping give the doctor or the nurse a complete profile, health profile of the individual. So if you're diabetic, hypertensive, if you have any other form of disease, it will immediately give that health provider an indication of the kind of treatment that you're likely to be receiving. And this, Madam Speaker, is a comprehensive plan to be provided together with universal health care. But in the coming months, Madam Speaker, we'll be pressing on with the hope that at some stage we can come to this Parliament and pass yet again, although we did pass legislation in 96, but to come with some new pieces of legislation that will allow us to introduce national health insurance. The other issues that will emerge, issues of the private sector involvement in national health, how do they tap into national health insurance, or I say national health, universal health care, and a number of other issues will come into being. These issues, Madam Speaker, we'll have to deal with as time goes on. Madam Speaker, I spoke of the issue of the medical school. I spoke of Super Hospital and the new national hospital. The new national hospital, Madam Speaker, that in itself is really an initiative of the United Workers Party as far back, and I see my member, Representative Prakashi, is smiling. But it is one, Madam Speaker, which started with the concept of the redevelopment of Victoria Hospital to the standard that we really wanted it to be. We started first by getting the French to get involved and to put in the new maternity wing. Then the European Union we approached, and they decided to make available to us at the time some $45 million for the rehabilitation of Victoria Hospital while the government decided that we must undertake to rehabilitate what we call the L Block. However, upon the entry, Madam Speaker, of the government of the St. Lucia Labour Party, the ideas and concepts changed, and therefore it was felt that a new hospital should be built. That figure rose from $45 million, Madam Speaker, to $60 million. And now, after going through the process of all of the feasibilities, engineering, technical feasibilities, all the feasibilities, and then going out to tender, to date, the figure has risen to $123 million. It means, therefore, Madam Speaker, that whereas the European Union has provided to the government of St. Lucia some $67 million, we are now called upon as government to find an additional $62 million to finance the construction of the new national hospital. But Madam Speaker, our government has a reputation, and I'm very confident that with the return of Sir John and the United Workers Party, we will find the additional $63 million or so to commence construction of the new national hospital. Madam Speaker, one of the things we will not do is to delay on the commencement of construction of this new facility. Because what has happened in this regard is the fact that in 1997, if only the government of the St. Lucia Labour Party had executed the plan, today we would have had a modern Victoria Hospital on the very site. If we delay today and say we cannot do it here, we don't want it here, we want to change the site, Madam Speaker, another 10 years before we can get it going, because it means everything must start all over again. All of the feasibilities, the costing, everything will change, and our people would be waiting, languishing for 10 years out there in society. And our government certainly is not about to allow this to happen to our people. Madam Speaker, I want to move quickly on to the Ministry of Labour to say that the Ministry of Labour is one of a new challenge to me. And so far, the number of challenges, critical challenges, that we must undertake. One of the first which presents itself to us, Madam Speaker, is the question of the Labour Code. And members will recall, prior to the last general election, there seemed to have been a mad rush to pass the Labour Code with the hope that the Labour Code would attract some votes. That didn't work, Madam Speaker, and I believe that the time has come for us to return to the bargaining table, for us to sit down with all of the partners, all of the players, and to strike consensus and to have the code implemented once and for all. In the coming weeks, in the next 2 weeks, the Department of Labour will commence a 3-day consultation, the first step in the consultative process of discussing and looking at the areas of concern, the grey areas, to ensure that we have consensus from within, and then to move out to have consensus with the workers, the trade unions, the employers, and the Chamber of Commerce. One of the challenges, Madam Speaker, that the Labour Code presents to us is the administration of the Labour Code, and that in itself will present some financial implications to the government. Madam Speaker, on the issue of work permits, I want to say that this is an area that needs some attention. I came in and found a situation within the Ministry of Labour where it appears to me that the issuance of work permits seems simply to be a revenue-generating exercise. So you generate revenue. A work permit is $5,000, whatever it is, just process. My concern is that the work permit process, my concern is that it is not fulfilling its original intention. I believe the intention of a permit is to monitor the situation, to be able to give you a gauge of your shortfall in terms of your human resource capacity, to look and see where the areas that people are applying for work permits. So if in the event that it appears that there's a heavy request for work permits in the hotel sector, say in the managerial sector, in the culinary sector, it would mean, therefore, that the Ministry of Labour should be able to produce the statistics, say to the Ministry of Tourism, Ministry of Education, and to come up with some policy decisions to be able to enhance our human resource capacity in the country. Therefore, very soon, a committee will be put in place to review the whole exercise of work permits. You know, one of the situations, in fact, recently I had to take a decision. There is a policy decision that when people apply for work permits, that they must advertise in a newspaper. So they put an ad in a newspaper, and they advertise. Then they apply for a work permit and they put a copy of the ad to show you that they advertise. But there is no guarantee, there is no mechanism to say to minister or to the labor department that 10 people applied, there were no solutions. So we have indicated a few weeks ago to the company that whenever you are advertising for jobs in which you intend to attract foreigners, apart from the individual applying to the company, a copy of that application must come to the Ministry of Labour so that we can have an idea of who is applying and who is not applying. So if the employer indicates that no St. Lucians applied, we can say we have applications there from 5 St. Lucians, so why would they consider? These are some of the things we need to look at, and to be able to utilize the work permit issue, the processing of work permits, as a tool to be able to gauge our human resource capacity and to be able to present data that will help us in determining the training needs of our people. Madam Speaker, in closing, Madam Speaker, I want to say that the ILO, International Labour Organization, ever since I entered the ministry, has extended support to the Ministry of Labour and has indicated their willingness to assist us in many areas. This I welcome because I do know that they did assist us also in the preparation of the Labour Code, in all of the research that was done. And therefore, I do hope that will help us in restructuring the department and bringing about the kind of results that we are looking at presently. With this, Madam Speaker, I am hoping also that the OECS, who I engaged in recently, they too have indicated that they are willing to work with St. Lucia in terms of looking at the possibility of undertaking a labor market study to be able to determine in the Caribbean, and I'm hoping that they will accept this offer, they rather will respond to this, a labor market study that will be able to give us a clear indication of our labor market capacity and our needs here in St. Lucia. Madam Speaker, let me at this stage move to matters pertaining to my constituency, and they will not be long, because I believe that normally people expect parliamentarians to make mention of their communities and the needs of communities. First and foremost, I must indicate that I'm very thankful for the people of Castries North, who reinstated their confidence in me to give me yet another opportunity to serve them as their parliamentary representative. Let me assure them that I'm very much aware of the expectation, particularly by the standards which I set before. It means at this time I cannot fall below the bar. But during this financial year, Madam Speaker, I'm very much aware that in the constituency, one of the ways of delivering services effectively to the constituency is by establishing a network of community development committees, which have already started throughout the constituency. In fact, in the country's North constituency, there are some very vibrant communities in a place like Carrelee, a very vibrant group, community group, which is engaged in maintaining the constituency. Cedars and Sunderland recently established their constituency, their community development committee. Kew Gardens recently did theirs. And you have a community called Cameron Heights, up at Le Prairie. They too have a committee, and Le Prairie, as we know, is a very established community with an established club and many other organizations engaged in a number of activities. Throughout the constituency, like many constituencies, Madam Speaker, there is always a need for roads, and the Minister for Communications and Works has already given me the nod, and he has indicated that since I didn't trouble him for the last 4 months for roads, that he'll be able to give me some undivided attention this time around, so that my people in communities such as Union Hilltop, Armandale, Balatam, Ondido Road, Agard Roads, Sunny Acres, Carrelee, Cedar Sunbelt, and Forgotten Boundary, together Bize, UDC Housing, and the Millland, all of these areas, we are hoping that we'll be able to look at them one way or the other, at least to commence the process of road rehabilitation throughout the constituency. The Minister for Community Development and Social Transformation is not here, but I'm depending on him because somewhere in the budget I have recognized some figures, and I'm certain that he will be able to consider for me two community facilities, as they call them, human resource development centers, in the communities of Chase Gardens and Agard Land. Water improvement, Madam Speaker, is a critical one, and like the rep for the Castries East constituency, our people at Carrelee have been suffering for too long. Carrelee, Odlam City, and the upper reaches of Mondedon, Chase Gardens, they're suffering for too long. And it is my hope that through the World Bank project, that within the next few months, that we'll be able to bring relief to those individuals and to provide them with the necessary water. In some areas like Nicholas Land, Zimil Land, Cedars Road, and other areas, what is required is really an improvement in the supply from all of these, what we call spaghetti lines, to provide a 3-inch or 4-inch line that is more reliable. In terms of sports facilities, Madam Speaker, I believe the Minister for Sports, having looked at the figures in the estimate, I believe the Minister responsible for sports will be able to give us some attention in Chase Gardens to improve on the facility, Bapatak, Sunbelt, Agard, Le Prairie Playing Field, where we believe that lighting is necessary. In terms of community parks, he spoke of wanting to develop community parks and enhance communities. Madam Speaker, I'm anticipating that the Minister will provide such. I want to say one thing to the Minister for Education, that Castries North is considered to be the education district of St. Lucia, in that Castries North comprises some of the most distinguished schools, the St. Mary's College, the St. Joseph's Convent, the Castries Comprehensive Secondary School, the Vidbutel Secondary School, SD Academy, Vidbutel Primary, you just name it, Ira Simmons, they all fall in Castries North. So when you look at Castries North, you can declare Castries North as the education district of St. Lucia with some of the finest learning institutions. And therefore, in the very not too distant future, I will be approaching you, seeking your support, seeking your assistance to upgrade those schools in that part of the constituency. Madam Speaker, I want to thank you. I want to thank the people of Castries North. What? I didn't really. I want to thank the people of Castries North. I want to thank those who stayed with me through my darkest nights and loneliest moments through the last 9 years. I want to thank the officials in the Ministry of Health who, ever since my entry into the ministry, have given me great support who have stood with me and who continue to work with me. I want to thank the nurses and the doctors and other health workers, the community health aides and the assistants, nursing assistants, the ward maids at Victoria Hospital, the kitchen staff, and all of them who got great expectation of me as minister responsible for health. Let me assure you that with the support of my Prime Minister and Minister for Finance, that there's some goodies coming for you, and you can only be satisfied once it is delivered to you at the right moment. Madam Speaker, I believe the budget which was presented by Prime Minister and Minister for Finance, bridging the divide and reuniting St. Lucia, forging one destiny by creating opportunities for all, is indeed a masterpiece after 9 years. I know my friends on the other side understand it. I know they too appreciate the content of what was delivered. And I do hope that as we execute and deliver this budget, that we all in this country will come together and unite for the betterment of our country. I stand in support of the appropriation bill 2006, 2007, 2008.